Water Legacy Subcommittee for this March 22nd. First of all, I want to apologize for the delay and the wait that you folks had to put up with, but we were doing other business, as you well know. Before we get into the agenda, I would like to make two minor changes to the agenda. I have, I'm going to ask Mr. Mueller to give us a status report on the current funds that we have in the Clean Water Legacy. And then I'm going to invite Bowser to step forward and give us a summary of their report, because I think their report will help us think through the bills that we're going to hear. Both have promised to be very brief. So without much ado, Mr. Mueller.
Madam Chair and members, there's a one-page handout that's being passed out right now that there's two parts to it. The top part is just listing all the proposals that we're hearing from the different Senate files that we're hearing tonight. And then the second part is what I'll go through now, showing the what the balance is of the Clean Water Fund based on the current forecast and what was appropriated in the last year in Chapter 172. So I'm going to go through that first. So we'll work off the two boxes that says Clean Water Fund Balance. The first box shows the fund balance based on the current forecast. Revenues were down a little bit from last year from what we had based on the appropriations from, or the revenue forecast from last year. It's down about $2.5 million. Last year, we had sort of set aside about a 10% fund balance of the Clean Water Fund for the two-year period. And based on the new revenue expectations, the fund balance is going to drop to about $5.3 million, and which is 6.6% of the fiscal year 2011 expected revenue. So the 10% buffer we had sort of left ourselves last year is already down to 6.6%, and that's just because the revenues are coming in a little bit slower than we were expecting last year. So discussion that we'll have to have here and in division also is what level of funding, or if there's any additional sort of flexibility to do any additional spending maybe out of this fund, or whether maybe, say, a 5% fund balance is a good enough cushion to leave on in the fund, when last year we were deciding a 10% fund balance was necessary. And also note that the Lessard Sam's Outdoor Heritage Council has decided to keep at least a 10% fund balance in their fund. And so just for discussion purposes, we'll have to discuss whether there's enough room in this the Clean Water Fund to do any extra appropriations beyond what we appropriated last year, and what type of fund balance the members are comfortable leaving with the Clean Water Fund. Happen to answer any other questions.
Members, are there any questions for Mr. Mueller on this point? Well, it's something we're going to have to keep in mind as we listen to the bills. And
Madam Chair?
Yes,
Mr. Mueller, maybe you want to point out the forecasted amounts for the next biennium?
Yes, Madam Chair. Senator Anderson, the current biennium, the forecasted revenue is of $156 million for the biennium. And we should note that going up to next biennium, since we have two full years of revenue coming into the fund, the expected revenues coming in jumps up to $173.5 million. So there will be significantly more revenue available.
Can we buy a new tape player with our money? We might need one.
Yes. Madam Chair and Senator, so there will be significantly more revenue available to appropriate next year than what we had the current biennium, because the current biennium, remember, the fiscal year 10 had a shortened, I think we were only getting 8% of the revenue in fiscal year 10 because the new sales tax was just starting. So we should next year be able to appropriate about $20 million more probably than we did the current biennium.
Madam Chair, I think we do need
Senator
to be
Trendison.
Cautious about this, and I know there's proposals in front of us today to spend a lot of that reserve, and I think we should be making sure that we maintain a significant cushion, you know, at least 5%, so that we can make sure that if things go south in the next year, before the next, well, tax collections change, that we don't end up in the hole with money that we've already appropriated. So hopefully we can recoup it next year. We could start to fill in that 10% a year, which I think we should have for 2 years, and then after that we can not worry about it so much.
So, Senator Anderson, we're down to 6.6% reserve right now. Mm-hmm. Are you making a suggestion that we stay at that, or that possibly we could go down to 5%? Do you have any thoughts?
Well, Madam Chair, that's what I was thinking. Somewhere in that, I would say that would be an absolute floor that I would support, going below 5% for this year. But we could contemplate just leaving it as is and not touching it. I guess we'll have to see what proposals, how much support there is for the proposals in front of us. We have some good things that people have brought to us.
Thank you, Senator Anderson. Other members?
Madam
Senator
Chair,
Fredrickson?
I was thinking about the last revenue forecast, and the weakness in the revenue forecast is in individual income tax, and the sales tax is much more stable, at least at this point. And we're several months into the biennium now. I don't think there's quite the risk that there was last year at this time we're looking at. But certainly we want to keep a few percent in reserve. I don't know if it should be 5 or 4 or 5.5. Or certainly we need a reserve.
Thank you, Senator Fredrickson. Seeing no other comments, I'd like to invite Julie Blackburn to the table to give us a very brief report on Bowser's work, because I think it will help us inform some of the bills we hear.
Thank you for having Bowser here to present. My name is Julie Blackburn. I'm Assistant Director for the Minnesota Board of Water and Soil Resources. We received with our appropriations of Clean Water Funds last year a requirement to submit a report on Clean Water Fund activities by March 1st, and we submitted that. What I have in front of you is a summary of the activities on the accomplishments we have had so far with the Clean Water funding, and I realize that our committee hearing is much later than we thought it was going to be, and therefore I'm going to be very brief. I want to just highlight two basic things. First of all, we had a couple of different types of appropriations. The majority of the appropriations that we had were for competitive grant funds. And the competitive grant program funds were decided by an interagency team that includes health, PCA, DNR, AG, and Bowser. And so the interagency team reviews all of the different proposals. They actually wrote the ranking criteria and the RFP. And so by the time it comes to the Bowser Board to approve the grants, they have gone through quite a sifting through, and therefore the best projects really rise to the top. And I believe this was the intent of the legislature when it created the Clean Water Legacy Act to embrace the existing systems that are in place. So just briefly, in 2010, Bowser received $18 million for clean water funds. There's a number of different categories there that you can see on the bottom of the first page. I'm going to go very quickly right into the top of the second page. The ranking criteria, this was used for all of the competitive grant funds. Qualitative factors, we ranked highest on the water quality outcomes and prioritization plans. And then the plans included both the TMDL implementation plans or local water management plans. So you can see that it was a very rigorous process that we put all of the different grant applications through. The very bottom of the page, page 2, outlines the competitive review process that we use both interagency and within Bowser, in which we also used the same process for the general fund competitive grants that we also have. On the top of page 3, you'll see a cutout of the metro area and some of the grant funds that we appropriated for the metro area and then the outstate area. Some examples of the 42 applications that we received and that were funded for three of the grant programs. There's some really great accomplishments there, but I know your agenda is very tight and late, so I'm not going to go over details on them, although I certainly would answer any questions you have. On the top of page 4 is the subsurface sewage treatment system grants that we had and the feedlot grants. It is interesting to note that of the feedlot funds, it was the only funds that didn't go out 100%. All of the other grant applications far exceeded the money available except for in the feedlot areas. We do require a 25% match, and our understanding is that with the farm economy right now, that's just very difficult to come up with. We funded technical assistance. That's at the bottom of page 4, and we used that to match the federal 319 funds that came through the PCA last year. The 319 funds require 45% match, which is almost impossible for our local units of government to come up with these days. So we used our technical assistance as the match.
Madam Chair, Ms. Blackburn,
Senator Fredrickson.
On your map, there are two distinct areas where these funds apparently were used. Is there some reason for those distinct areas?
Madam Chair and Senator Fredrickson, the 319 funds are only for TMDL implementation funds or implementation projects, and most of those are in that Minnesota River Valley and in the southeastern portion of the state.
Madam Chair, Ms.
Senator
Blackburn,
Fredrickson.
As long as you answered one question, I'd like to ask another one. The feedlot grants, what involvement does the Department of Agriculture have in those grants? Are they completely different? Are these associated with the Department of Agriculture, or does the Department of Agriculture have another program?
Madam Chair and Senator Fredrickson, the feedlot grants, all of our programs go out together, and the feedlot grants is also rolled into the same competitive grant round as the Ag BMP program, which is implemented by Department of Ag. And again, those were reviewed also by that interagency team. But it is primarily going through the cost share program that Bowser has in order to do those upgrades. This program, specifically on the feedlot upgrades, we work very, very closely with the Department of Ag and the PCA, and we try to address those under 300 animal units in riparian areas, as the statute or the language for the appropriation specifically states.
Thank you.
So going to the top of page 5, conservation drainage, we had a very small amount there. We only had $200,000 available. We did receive over 15 applications, over $1 million in requests, which is 5 times the amount of money available, doing some very interesting projects on that. The last two programs that I'm going to talk about are easement programs, okay? So the rest of them were the competitive grant programs. These two are easements, and they run through our RIM program. On the bottom of page 5 is the riparian buffer easements. We had $3 million available in this fiscal year, $3 million available in the next fiscal year. We had a sign-up that began November 1st, and by the end of January, all of the funds for the first year were already spoken for. That included 86 easements in 9 different counties. We targeted it towards acres that were already in the federal program of the Conservation Reserve Program. So the federal government had basically already paid for the conservation practice. And then we went on top of that with our permanent easement so that those are held permanently now. So over 700 acres in that program. We know that we have $3 million available in fiscal year 2011. We continue to take applications, and the remaining $3 million is already spoken for the next fiscal year. On the back side of the last page at the top is the Wellhead Protection Easement Program, and we are working with the Department of Health. These are highly, highly targeted wellhead easements. In the most vulnerable wellhead protection areas in the state. There are 7 communities that are targeted. We sit down with the Department of Health in order to figure those out. We have $1 million available in fiscal year 2010 and another $1 million available in fiscal year 2011. And without a doubt, this will go very quickly. We already know that some of them are in the works, and we expect to have all of the money tied up within the next month or two. So that is a very brief update on our Clean Water Fund activities. The entire report, which is about 39 pages, is available on our website, and it includes information on every one of the grant recipients, how we targeted it, and more specific information about that criteria, the ranking criteria that was used.
Thank you, Ms. Blackburn. Did I hear you say then that you have used all of your allocated funds, both for this current year and the next fiscal year, except for the feedlot?
Madam Chair, we have for the RIM easements, the conservation easements for the buffer program and the wellhead program. Those funds are very allocated already through the next fiscal year. We have not done our competitive round of the those funds that are available for competitive applications. That is in the works right now. We do expect to have that grant round available for submitting RFPs late this summer, early fall.
And those competitive applications, those are the things,
yes,
on page 2?
That's correct, Madam Chair.
Are there other questions from the members? Thank you so much, Ms. Blackburn.
Thank you.
For the record, we do have a quorum. The first item on the agenda is Senator Senjum, Senate's file 1802. Senator Senjum. Welcome, Senator Senjum.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. Senate File 1802 is about a place about 10 miles north of Rochester called Lake Shady, and not to be misinterpreted from the standpoint of Lake Zumbro, which some of you have perhaps traveled to on bonding tours. This is a lake that, as you're approaching Rochester, frankly leaving Rochester, you literally drive through the lake on Highway 52. It's a rather picturesque little setting there. The lake itself is 180 acres, and what we're here tonight to talk about is the possibility of getting a grant from the Clean Water Fund relative to its overall restoration. And Madam Chair, with respect to 1801, I wonder whether or not I could orally amend the language. I have not looked at this language for probably well over a year, Madam Chair, and realize tonight, because there has been a fair amount of work done on this by a task group, but I'm not sure how much material you have. If I could...
We have this document, Senator Senjum.
Right, yes. I wonder if I might just suggest to the committee and perhaps one of the members, if in the language of the bill, if we could delete to dredge and maintain and insert for the restoration of, I think that act more accurately describes where we are in this process. So it would be for the restoration of, to replace, to dredge and maintain.
Senator Chair, Fredrickson.
I would move that amendment.
Senator Fredrickson moves the oral amendment on line 1.2, delete dredge and maintain, and insert for the restoration of.
Madam Chair, Senator, I believe that's line 1.7. Did you say 1.2?
I did, and you... Oh, it's both in 1.2 and 1.7.
And my amendment would be to correct the title.
It would be both lines. Thank you, Senator Kugler.
The title would correct.
Any discussion on the amendment? All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? The amendment is adopted. Senator Senjum.
Thank you, members, and thank you, Madam Chair. Maybe I could just refer you to the back page of this document that you have, because I think that summarizes what we're thinking about here. And by the way, this is the report of a stakeholders group. As you can see, it's quite technical. And they have spent a lot of time working on this project from the standpoint of Lake Shady and its future, and if, in fact, it is to have a future, or whether or not we are to lose it to a river kind of format as opposed to actually a lake. But, Madam Chair, and maybe you can help me on this one. As the stakeholder group has come forward and worked, they've developed an action plan around two items. One related to the potential hazards of the lake, and I did not mention this lake is created and exists because of a dam that was built, I think, in, I believe, 1929, but still in good shape, although they do regard it as mid-level in terms of high risk, middle risk, and low risk. But I think most would agree that the dam is in pretty good shape, and certainly the kind of thing that could be maintained for many, many years on in the future. The task group has suggested here that one of the proposed actions, and this may not be covered, and this is why I bring this up, to be honest with you. I don't know if public safety concerns related to a waterway are appropriate for what you're considering here in terms of clean water funding. Nonetheless, they're proposing here to complete a hazardous analysis relative to the dam and relative to, frankly, even times like right now when the waters are relatively high and, you know, there's conceivable concerns of a dam failure and some concerns downstream. And for $92,000, half of which would be asked for under the Clean Water Fund, in other words, they pay $46,000 locally, they suggest an action plan revolved around really assessing the public safety aspects of this dam from a hazards perspective. And then beyond that, then, the restoration itself, they're talking about something called a comprehensive bathymetry. I don't know. Does anybody know what that is? Bathymetry and sediment analysis of the lake. And basically, it's take a analysis of the lake, its sediment, its value, because there is thought to be some significant gravel deposits here which may be of value from the standpoint of restoration, maybe even from the standpoint of using that the resources of that gravel money to frankly redevelop the lake. But the second half then valued at around $50,000, 25 of which would be requested from this fund, is for basically doing the engineering studies related to this sedimentation, to the nature of it, and the ability to really, with some value, look at what's there and assess whether or not we can go forward with the lake from a restoration point of view. And it gets somewhat technical from an engineering point of view. But they need that assessment. And in the end, based on that assessment, there will be a determination of whether or not the lake survives or the lake reverts into a river and the dam comes out.
Are there questions for Senator Senjum? Senator Fredrickson.
Madam Chair, just
having a little understanding of our programs, it would seem to me that the dam would better come under the program of dam safety and the Department of Natural Resources rather than the Clean Water Fund. I don't know, Madam Chair, Senator Senjum, has the Department of Natural Resources made an assessment of this dam, or is that?
Yes, they have, and it's actually on page 27 in the bottom where they talk about class 1, class 2, class 3, class 2 being significant in terms of or medium, as they say. In any event, this is mid-level in terms of its classification of risk. So, yes, they have been intimately involved in the stakeholder group and have made this assessment relative to the dam. And I do agree that the request for any help and assistance relative to the dam is probably better sought in another group through another venue.
Senator Senjum, I have some questions. Who's been maintaining this dam and this lake in the past? I mean, how's this been taken care of?
Madam Chair and members, I'm not sure I can say that anybody's taken care of it. It was a lake in the 70s when our kids were young that we used to go out to, and you could recreate, you could swim in it. In the intervening 30 years, it's one of these 180-acre lakes that's probably 6 inches deep. And so I think it's fair to say that really no one has been taking care of it. And you know, it's the soil conservation practices and so on. I'm not here to suggest fault on anybody's side, but it's simply filled in to the point where it is a very, very shallow lake at this point.
So it's filled in because of land runoff mostly?
Well, I suppose where does topsoil come from? I suppose, yes, conservation practices, which, of course, I think we'd all agree are getting better, and with the programs out there now, will continue to get better. And for those of you that are familiar with Lake Zumbro, which is, again, maybe about 5 miles downstream, there are periods of the year, this being one of them, and we are concerned about Lake Zumbro filling up. Today, and I suspect at this very moment, the dam gates are open. The water is rushing through. It's carrying with it a lot of sediment into Lake Zumbro itself, a lake that we're really trying to fix up. And so if at some point we can deal with this Lake Shady problem, it would hopefully not be a continuing source of sediment for Lake Zumbro, but everything above the dam and Lake Shady is land runoff, and how it gets there, I suppose we all probably know.
Senator Senjum, I just got this about 2 minutes ago.
Sure.
Do you have any sense of what you're asking for in an appropriation?
Madam Chair, yes. It would be $25,000 for the restoration piece, and we will talk to the dam safety people about the other aspects of funding.
Senator Senjum, $25,000 for an engineering study?
Yes. As detailed, Madam Chairman, on the back page, page 38, where we talk about bathymetry and sediment analysis. Apparently, Madam Chairman, if you're in that engineering world, you feel like you have to sequence through these kind of things in order to finally get to an intelligent decision about the future of this lake.
So will you be coming back next year for additional funds to work on this full?
Madam Chair, possibly, but there's also, I will suggest, a feeling that once you get through the silt and the topsoil, that there may be fairly valuable gravel deposits down there, which may be used and sold. And there's a possibility that that may even, in fact, go a long way towards paying for the lake restoration.
One of the questions we typically ask when we're looking at clean water funds is, how will what you're proposing to do improve or solve the problem? So first we need to know a little more clearly what the problem is. And will this clean the water? Will it restore the lake? Or will this $25,000 just provide the study?
Madam Chair and members, you know, from a general citizen's point of view, the lake is in need simply because it's a lake which people used to recreate on and can no longer do that again. It's so shallow. If you go through this document, however, you will find TMDL issues discussed and issues related to sedimentation and concerns from a TMDL standpoint relative to it being an impaired water and cleaning it up or doing this analysis, making some decisions about it will ultimately, it's felt, you know, solve that problem, take this thing off the impaired waters.
So, Senator Sengen, would your group be one of the groups that would be putting in for one of the grants from Bowser that she talked about just a few minutes ago?
Well, I would assume quite possibly, yes. You know, if there was not resources within the lake itself, and I'm talking about gravel resources, there's a strong feeling that there might be some potential there.
Right, but the Clean Water Legacy Amendment isn't about commercial the commercial potential. The Clean Water Legacy Amendment's about cleaning and protecting waters.
Yeah.
And so
if you're part of a
TMDL,
yeah.
Would you be providing a grant to Bowser in order to get some funds to get – have you got a TMDL in place? Would this be part of the granting process?
Madam Chair, I probably was not aware of that grant program, and so that is that's certainly a possibility, no question. This lake has got a lot of attention. It's got – as you can see from this report, it's terrific stakeholder interest. And so if there are some possibilities here, we want to certainly pursue them.
Senator Fredrickson?
Madam Chair, Senator Sengen, I've had a little more opportunity to look through this document you gave us. And I was looking on page 19, Lake Bed Ownership. And I'm wondering if you've gotten opinion perhaps from the Attorney General's office as to who owns the lake bed, because that would affect, you know, what, if any, state funds we could use. The first paragraph is rather contradictory. It gives an either or. If Lake Shady was a navigable lake at Minnesota's admission to the Union in 1858, the state owns the entire land under the lake in fee. If it was a non-navigable lake in 1858, then in parentheses, seems likely since lake was not created until dam installed in mid-1930s, adjoining property owners own in fee out to the center of the lake, subject to control of surface use by the state. So,
Madam Chair, Senator Fredrickson, and that is still a unresolved issue with respect to the legal ownership. But you know, it's all thought to be public, but it may not be. You know, reading that, mm-hmm. And it's going back a long way in history. I don't know if it was navigable or not. It would have been a river in those days. No question about that. The dam could not exist without. The lake would not exist without that dam. So it probably was a river. Whether that was navigable or not, I suspect maybe by canoe.
Madam Chair, Senator Sengen, adjoining landowners might have a renewed interest, too, depending on how valuable the gravel deposits or other deposits are.
Well, I could even carry that a little further, Madam Chair, and not to have a whole lot of fun with this, but Orinoco has within its history, and even today, something called Gold Rush. And they did mine gold out of this this area back an awful long time. You can Google it and read about it. So, but it apparently it wasn't enough to be profitable. Maybe it would be today.
Madam Chair, Senator Senjum, it would take you a long, long time to get all the environmental permits to do the mining.
Well, Madam Chair, we were just discussing whether a match was required for the use of these funds, and I wasn't sure. Senator Fredrickson thinks we are. Maybe you know.
I think the priority, Senator Kubley, is that having matches does improve the
chances of funding.
Mm-hmm. Senator,
Madam Chair, if I wasn't clear on that, the projected cost of I'll just say the restoration part of the back page was $50,000. Is $50,000? The request is $25,000. So there is a
1-to-1 match.
Yeah, there is a 50% local assumption here.
Well, Senator Senjum, I think we have some questions that remain on this, and what I'd like to suggest is that we lay this on the table,
sure,
for possible inclusion. We have a number, sure, of other bills, and we're limited on funds, so we're going to have to negotiate some of these to see.
Sure.
And there do seem to be some questions around this one, so if you wouldn't mind that we
No, not at all, Madam Chair. And in fact, but for our the indecisive timing today, there were a couple people coming up locally, which we suggested that maybe they not, so they're not here to help me.
Madam Chair.
Senator Fredrickson.
I'd like to offer a little further amendment.
Senator Fredrickson.
On line 6, insert 25,000. And then delete the former, after in the former amendment, after restoration. Well, delete everything after resources on line 7 and insert for a restoration engineering plan for Lake Shady. And maybe Mr. Knopf could help me craft a phrase requiring the local match.
Mr. Chairman, I think what you'd want to, Madam Chair, excuse me, sorry about that.
Okay.
Madam Chair, Senator Fredrickson, I think the best thing to do would just be to say that the appropriation must be matched by an equal amount from the city of...
From non-state.
For non-state.
For non-state funds.
Okay. Must be matched by an equal amount of non-state funding, non-state money.
Senator Senjum, do you... do you have comments on that amendment?
No, that was absolutely what the intent was, so no problem. And thank you, Senator Fredrickson. I think your language is far better than mine.
Mm-hmm. And then, members, is there any discussion on the amendment? Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? So the amendment is adopted. Senator Fredrickson, did you want to make a motion for laying the bill
Madam
on
Chair,
the table?
Madam Chair, I would move to lay Senate File 1802 as amended on the table for possible inclusion into an omnibus bill.
Is there any further discussion on the motion? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
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 Those opposed? The motion passes.
Madam Chair and members, thank you so much.
Thank you,
appreciate
Senator
it.
Senjum. It's complicated. Very complicated. So the next item on the agenda. Uh, I believe we'll take Senator Bonoff. Senator Olson is not here, and Senator Anderson is going to do her bill. Senator Bonoff's bill is Senate File 2686. Welcome.
Thank you. Good evening, Madam Chair, members.
And thank you to your friends who waited so many hours.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, I have an amendment, but actually we have amended the amendment, but the secretary had gone home, and so while it is typed up, thanks to our wonderful staff, it is not in an amendment form. So what I was wondering is if we could discuss the latest version, even though it isn't an official amendment. Would that be all right?
That would be fine with me, Senator.
Okay, Bonner. Thank you. So what you have before you, we'll call it, just for discussion purposes, if you wouldn't mind, the A2. This is a project with regard to the Schmidt Lake Restoration Pilot Project. Schmidt Lake is in Plymouth. Schmidt Lake is part of the Shingle Creek Watershed District, and it is a lake that is at the very top of this watershed district. It is an impaired lake and thus has an effect on all the other lakes in the watershed district. So we're here before you today to request an appropriation to do a pilot project whereby we would restore this impaired lake and then be able to look at the difference that restoring this lake will have on the rest of the watershed district. Rather than me going into a lot of detail about this project, given I have expert witnesses here with me to testify, I would prefer to let them do that. And so I would start with Jamie Page, and we'll go forward from there.
I don't know if I'm an expert witness. I'm just a doe-eyed citizen here. So,
welcome, Mr. Page.
Thank you very much. I'm a resident of Schmidt Lake. I've lived on the lake for about 6 years now.
Mr. Page, if you'd pull that microphone a little closer.
Sure, absolutely.
And I hope folks are signing in on. There's a tablet there to sign in
on.
Thank you.
Okay. So Schmidt Lake is located in Plymouth, Minnesota, and like Senator Bonoff said, it is the top of the watershed, which gives us a unique opportunity to here to try to do some restoration projects and improve the water quality. When the residential area around Schmidt Lake was developed in the 1960s, environmental concern was not the top priority, and they created 92 storm sewer drains that went totally unfiltered into the lake in 8 different access points. And over the years, literally now 4 decades or longer, the amount of material is accumulating, the amount of items that go into the lake, such as fertilizer, road salt, yard waste, sand, petroleum products, they keep accumulating, and the water quality is getting less and less all the time. So what we're looking to do as citizens, we have a very active lake association. There's 58 homes on the lake. We're very active. We're part of a couple of DNR pilot programs already. What we would like to do is install some type of a catch basin or some filtration to stop the contaminants to keep entering into the lake. On the surface, it's quite simple. I'm sure it's more difficult than that, but on the surface, it's quite easy. We already have a TMDL that's in place. We're at the top of the watershed. Our elevation at Schmidt Lake is 922 feet. We feed to Bass Lake, which is 16 feet lower than us. And the advantage of Schmidt Lake is it's a small lake, so we can get a real good test. We have 37 acres, and 34 of that is littoral. So our impervious percentage of land use is 26.3% of the 204 acres of drainage in the lake. So.
Okay, Mr. Page, thank you.
Yes.
I'm going to back you up a little bit. Tell me again, you're looking for these funds to help install filters.
There would be, correct, installing some filters.
And you used a term I didn't understand.
I used a term called catch basins.
Yes, and beyond the catch basin, you talked about the...
Littoral.
What does that mean?
Littoral, that means it's the shallow part of the lake that the wildlife prefers. from what I understand, again, I'm just a citizen here, but it's 15 feet or less of water depth.
Mm-hmm. Basically where weeds can grow.
Okay. So the part you're looking at really has some biological implications as well as cleaning the water.
Absolutely.
What is some of the biology you have on your lake?
We've got a lot of studies on the chlorophyll, the Secchi disc readings that we've got, if it's atrophic, if it's not. We've got data that goes back into the 1970s, actually. So it definitely is an impaired lake. The water quality needs improving.
Madam Chair.
Senator Banoff.
Would it be possible for one of the members to move the words that I have before you as an oral amendment so that you could actually have the language before you?
I need somebody who knows more about the rules. Senator Fredrickson, do you have an idea?
Yeah, you can.
Madam Chair, we could.
You can just move it. That doesn't matter.
Yeah. We could move this as an amendment.
Is this a delete all amendment, Senator Bonner?
Yes, Madam Chair.
So we have an oral delete all amendment or a
written.
Delete all amendment that we have.
It's a written delete
us,
all amendment, yes.
Yeah. It's not an amendment form.
I would move that for Senator Bonner.
Senator Fredrickson moves the A2 amendment for Senate File 2686. So we have that amendment. Any discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? So the amendment is adopted.
Madam Chair, I just want to draw your attention to the last sentence on that amendment, that this appropriation requires a 10% local match, and that was added so that members should know that we would insist that there be some additional funding outside of what we did here. If there's more, that would be great, but at least a minimum.
Okay, Senator Bonoff, that brings up a question I have on the first line where you have $485,000 in fiscal year. Do you want 2012 or 2011? Because we're not dealing with the next biennium right now.
Madam Chair, 2011 would be wonderful.
So we need to amend that.
Madam Chair, I would move that amendment.
Senator Fredrickson moves amending I don't know what line to call this, but fiscal year from 2012 to 2011. We have other people at the table that
yes,
had
Madam
something
Chair.
They wanted to talk about.
Larry Adams, the president of the Schmidt Lake Association, would like to say a few remarks, and then I have one more after that who would just say a few remarks.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Adams.
Thank you. I've been a homeowner on Schmidt Lake for about 15 years. I'm the current president of the association, and I just wanted to reiterate some of the things that Jamie said in terms of the high participation of our homeowners. We have a very active association. We collect about $15,000 a year in dues. We're working with partners right now at the DNR, Plymouth, Shingle Creek. We're trying to do all the right things. We've done a lot in terms of an association, in terms of paying for bacteria treatments, milfoil and curly leaf treatments, rain gardens around the lake, and we're currently embarking on an aeration project at the lake, all funded by the homeowners. But we simply don't have the resources when it comes to the infrastructure. When you talk about 8 storm drains filtering straight into the lake, it's really cost prohibitive from an association standpoint to be able to try and fund that out of dues. And so I'm just here to reiterate that I believe that the appropriation would be a one-time thing and would be a tremendous help to our lake.
Thank you, Mr. Adams. Have you, the homeowners, applied to any other funds, such as the Public Facilities Authority or any of the other grants that are out there?
The very first fund that grant that we applied for was the Met Council 10 years ago, and we've been applying for grants ever since. Right now we're part of a treatment program with the DNR. We get $10,000 this year. It hasn't been finalized, but that's really for the invasives that are in the lake. We're trying to maintain the balance in the lake, and with the sediment continuing to pour in the lake year after year, it's really taken the lake out of balance.
Senator Fredrickson.
Madam Chair, and to any of you, how are you going to try and restore Schmidt Lake specifically? You know, what practices are you going to put in place?
We would certainly do some sediment removal, and then also with the filtration and the catch basins that would slow the water from entering the lake. the sediment would fall off into the bottom of these catch basins, and then we could clean that up. And
will you be doing rain?
Rain gardens? Yes. Yeah, rain gardens. We're working on rain gardens already in the appropriate places. We've been working on a number of projects, which Larry can certainly talk about.
Mr. Adams, would you elaborate a little bit again, if you were listening?
Madam Chair, could I ask one other question? So you're going to try and prevent sediment from flowing into the lake?
That's correct. Yeah. That's one of our biggest problem that we have right now is the amount of sediment coming into the lake.
And are there other aspects that you're thinking about doing? Other?
We've looked at all sorts of testing. We've looked at daylighting, that storm drain in Schmidt Lake Park, which takes up a long part. But again, the things that we'd like to do are simply unaffordable for an association to do based on dues.
Mr. Adams and is it Jamie?
Mr. Page. Yep, Page. Yep.
Mr. Page, I'm sorry.
No, that's fine.
As you heard when we were talking about Senator Senjum's bill, again, the Clean Water Legacy Funds are for cleaning and restoring. There are some other funds that are more closely aligned to the filtration. So are there other plans that we could begin with clean water funds, other things that you have on your wish list? Have you sought some of the other funds, the PF, what is it again? Mr. Knuth?
Or Dan?
This?
Madam Chair, some of the other, either the grants through the Public Facilities Authority or other Bowser, Board of Water and Soil Resources grants, have any of those been applied for?
We're in progress on one other one at this point. But this would certainly, I want to be clear, this would certainly clean our water. Right now, literally, the part of the problem is we don't have enough water depth in key parts of the lake because the sediment is building up in the lake all the time, and literally the water is not of quality at all because it's just muck. I mean, it's just so much of it coming in that parts of the lake are truly becoming unusable. When we started this, if you look at the lake now versus where it's been, where Trigvee's lived on the lake for 30 years, and if we don't do something now, in 20 years, the lake won't be a lake. So it's certainly a water quality, clean water thing because mm-hmm. of that.
Madam Chair, I think the focus is the storm drains and having a permanent solution. You know, we've worked with Plymouth on filters that go under the grates in the storm drains, and you know they're supplying them. They've helped maintain them, but that's really a couple year solution again. And you know, by working through the storm drain filters and creating some sort of filter within the storm drain that stops the sediment from coming in, we can have a solution that'll work forever theoretically.
Well, then, Mr. Adams, will you be able to maintain those filters? Will the city or the homeowners, because don't those filters have to be cleaned out every so often?
Yep. Currently, the city is maintaining the filters. We had a contract to do that, and the city decided because of liability purposes for pulling out those the heavy covers sure. that they didn't want anyone but themselves doing it. So they've agreed as part of our impaired waters plan to provide filters for the next 5 years. That isn't finalized, but again, I look at those yellow storm drain filters and say, that's nice, but that is not a permanent solution. If you built a storm sewer around a lake today, you would not build it how it was built around Schmidt Lake. And while we can't take houses out and create settling ponds, we can do something about the storm drain filter or the storm drains that are allowing all the sediment to pour directly into the lake on every time it rains. I mean, as homeowners, we're trying to do things in our own yards with rain gardens and things like that, but by far and away, the volume of water and the volume of sediment that comes in the lake comes through the storm drains.
And I don't want to belabor this, but I live in White Bear Lake, and we just finished paying for, through our taxes, the very thing you're asking for from this fund. Has the city or the area around there considered that?
We've talked to the city about this exact solution, and they've felt that it was cost prohibitive as well.
Actually, we have documentation that the written dialogues with the city started in the early 1970s.
Madam Chair, I too have been part of those discussions with the city, and I would concur that they are not in a position to help at this time, and that they are very hopeful that we will come back with a positive result from this conversation. Madam Chair, when I first was asked to come and meet with Jamie, I expected to just have Jamie, the whole neighborhood in the middle of the day on a summer day was all there to say, look at this lake. You know, this lake is too important of an asset. The other thing I would just remind members is that this is designed as a pilot so that we can also affect the rest of the watershed. And we will get you the information on where this is in the queue. I did ask that question, and we'll get it for you.
Well, that will be helpful. I mean, this is one of those things that's kind of in the gray area that we're dealing with. And if we looked at all the lakes in the state that need to be dredged, we don't have any clean water fund left. So that's why, you know, how does this move closer to the constitutional amendment intention? As you know, some people would say maybe this should be bonded for. Some people would say this is a local responsibility because you're installing equipment that will clean your lakes. So,
Madam Chair, if I could direct your attention to the handout that Jamie Page prepared. Under number 4, Why Schmidt Lake, TMDL in place, top of the watershed, small enough for a good test, has an active lake association, already participates in DNR pilot programs, willing and able to do before and after tests.
And those are all very good things.
Thank
those
you.
Those are all very good things. You have someone else that
yes,
wanted
I
to
do,
speak.
Yes, I do, Madam Chair. I'd like to call on Trigby Svard, the treasurer of the Schmidt Lake Association.
Mr. Svard, welcome.
Madam Chair, thank you. My name is Trigby Svard. I have lived on Schmidt Lake for 32 years. When I moved in on the north side of the lake, there were already some homes built on the south side. The north side and the west side was pretty much built in the 1979. And one of the things I enjoyed very much with my children at that time was a very clear, almost blue water lake. Then when we were out canoeing, we could feel the cold springs coming at our feet when we were out in the deep part of the lake. Subsequent years, there were more and more homes built around the area, not just on the lake, but also around all of Schmidt Lake. And when we today look at how it has changed, an objective assessment, because I am healthy, I spent almost every day in the summertime raking up weeds from the prevailing south winds on my beach so they can dry because they're very heavy as they're wet. And also I haul away about 1 to 2 pickup truck loads per week because I don't want all of that to stay in the lake. There are other homeowners that do not do that, and we have definitely, as part of some of the testing we have done, seen the muck, seen the soil level grow in the lake because the weeds keep drying, and all of that is originated from the runoff and fertilizing. And we are very tough with our neighbors, telling them what fertilizer to use, telling them to use as little as possible, etc. Again, coming back to a very strong homeowners association. So as a conclusion, I can say that my grandchildren that are maybe a little younger today than what my children were when we moved in 32 years ago do not use the lake because it is not inviting anymore. So any help to improve it would very much be appreciated. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Mr. Svard. Are there additional questions for Mr. Svard? So this was truly a natural lake, comes from natural springs.
It used to. I don't know if it does anymore, because I can't, the few of us that have had been in the lake do not feel those cold springs anymore.
I literally went around to every resident on the lake and talked to them about the project and got their signature. And at different points in the lake, we literally have 8 feet of muck that's accumulated. And the springs, quite honestly, are not effective anymore. Now the water that's coming in is coming in through the storm sewers.
So, Mr. Page, I'm glad you brought that up. So do you think that the storm sewers will correct the problem, or are you going to do other riparian amendments to the properties around the lake to keep the lake clean?
We're doing an aeration. Our part of our lake association, we're doing an aeration, a full lake aeration, where we're going to install...
How many, Larry?
Nine. They're going to be laying on the bottom of the lake. They'll put pure oxygen into the lake or air into the bottom of the lake to get the oxygen into the lake to try to dissolve part of that muck as well. We believe it's organic. We've had a lot of testing done. We've measured over the ice the last 2 winters, gone around different points in the lake. We've taken GPS coordinates to make sure we go right back. It's truly an impaired lake that needs help.
You've really made that case. What I'm suggesting is that will the installation of the filters solve the problem, or do you need to do other amendments to the lakeshore properties?
Well, there would certainly be dredging in the close to the storm sewer inlets where the sediment has accumulated. And then, we're adding rain gardens. A lot of people are going back to natural landscaping around the lake, et cetera. I'm not sure if I'm answering your question. Sorry.
No, that's fine. You're doing just fine.
I'm just a computer
guy. I'm just trying
to
get as much information as possible, because we have to make a case for this, again, based on priorities and likelihood that there will be a change, that it's a one-time, that you're going to fix it for good. And will these filters fix it for good is the question.
Yes.
Madam Chair, I believe Mr. Adams wants to just add one comment.
You know, I think that is exactly the sense of what we're trying to do with this project. I mean, obviously nobody knows for sure, but if we can capture the sediment at the storm drain level, we're going to prevent more sediment from coming into the lake. We'll deal, hopefully, with the aeration project with the sediment that's already in the lake. The dredging that he's talking about is simply the deltas that have built up over the years that are as high as the water level from what's happened. So certainly there'd be a little cleanup there, but the intent is that we, as a homeowners association, will continue to support what's happening in the lake through aeration and other means to clear up the problem within the lake, and that if we can stop the sediment from coming in the lake at the source, we'll be a long ways towards a permanent solution.
Has your community considered diverting that storm water to some holding ponds? That was one of the things we did around White Bear Lake, I recall, that we diverted our storm water so it didn't even go into the lake.
You know, we actually have considered that. The problem is between private homes and parkland owned by the city of Plymouth, there's no space to create. We would actually have to buy a house, tear it down, and create a holding pond. And again, it gets to be a cost prohibitive thing.
Just having to ask all the questions.
Thank you.
And Madam Chair, Mr. Untide is not speaking today, but he is here for moral support. And I will tell you that he has the most beautiful garden I think I've ever seen, and that is eco-friendly towards the lake.
Absolutely. Senator Dill.
Madam Chair, when I was sitting here looking at this watershed, I was wondering what percent of the watershed is an impervious surface. And do you know?
26%. It's on the sheet.
Okay, so that's not as bad as I thought. I think the DNR's new standards for lakeshore lots is something like 15% impervious and no more than that, something in that range. So there's plenty of places for the water to seep away. Now, the other thing I was thinking about is you're talking about introducing oxygen to the water to, are you trying to enhance the decomposition of the organic matter, and hopefully that lowers the, or gets rid of some of the
that, material that's in the, exactly right.
But then you still have the soil particles that are non-organic, and I kind of get the drift that you're going to try to remove some of that sediment that's near where the storm sewers enter the lake. Is that correct?
That's correct. If you could look at it there, if you looked at it from the sky, there's deltas around each of the storm drains. You don't even have to see where the storm drains are because you could see where the sediment is built up. So I think the thought is restoring those to their original depth, putting the filter in so that no more can come in.
Okay. And then at those sites, are you going to be reaching out into the water as far as you can go with a backhoe, or are you going to have some kind of a suction system for sucking it out of the lake, or what do you plan on doing?
You know, a couple of the private homeowners this year decided to take on the Delta themselves and hired a company. Unfortunately, 24 inches of ice wasn't enough, and the truck went through the ice. So I'll leave it to the experts on how they'll get the sediment out of the lake. They ended up going between the houses with the backhoe and basically tearing up their yards to get the Delta out.
And then is the sediment going to be trucked away, or is it going to be put somewhere else within the watershed?
Trucked away.
Okay.
Mr. Page.
Yes, I'm sorry, we have a recipient.
Mr.
Of
Page.
I'm sorry, thank you.
That's quite all right.
We have located a place that will take it. We've tested the soil. It's mostly non-contaminated, so we can truck it to a Corcoran where they will take it.
Well, you anticipated my question, Mr. Page, because, again, one of our problems in the White Bear Lake area is that we found that we did have significant contaminants, and so we couldn't just truck it away. And that meant hazardous waste removal and 10 times the cost. So I'm hoping you're right that
you've
done the testing. And
well, again, as a lake association, we've done some testing from different samples, and what we've sampled is non-contaminant. So if this proceeds, we would certainly do further testing to evaluate it.
Well, you've certainly done a great job presenting your case, and I think we're going to ask, before we move on the bill, what we need to do is finish the amendment. Senator Fredrickson offered that we could change the year from 2012 to 2011. Is there any questions from the committee? Any discussion on that? Those in favor of that date change, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? So that amendment passes.
Madam Chair, I move that Senate File 2686 be laid on the table and considered as part of an omnibus bill or for further consideration later.
Senator Fredrickson has moved that Senate File 2686 be laid on the table for further consideration, possible consideration later on.
As amended.
Thank you, Senator Bonner.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you very much, members.
And thank you to all of the lake owners who are trying so hard to fix up what was apparently a wonderful lake.
Thank you very much. Thank you for your time, Senators. Thank you.
Thank you.
The motion has been made and amended. Those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? The motion is adopted.
Okay.
And where is
Kent is not here, but Kent is available.
Where's Kent?
The committee has before it now Senate File 3138. Senator Rummel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. We have a pretty complex bill in front of us, and I hope I can do it justice because so many things have happened in the last couple of hours. Right now I've got to find even my notes on the bill. Mr. Chair and committee members, this is a bill that establishes a metropolitan area groundwater monitoring account and fee. So I had a whole list of things to share with you about the groundwater situation, and because it's so late, I don't think I'm going to go in great detail on that. I have with me Mr.
Lacusmo,
who can go and answer your questions and go into some detail. But I think you have at your place a Star Tribune article, and I just wanted to pull up a couple of quotes from that article. One of the purposes of the groundwater, of the legacy amendment, was to address groundwater issues. And last year, we spent most of the groundwater money on the geological survey. And those dollars are being spent mostly in outstate or outside the metro area. This bill addresses some of the problems inside the metro area relative to groundwater. The Met Council has done some studies, and if the Met Council population projections come true, increased use of groundwater in urban parts of the metro area will lead to significantly lowered aquifer levels to the detriment of lakes, ponds, and some shallower private wells. In parts of Anoka County, the use of groundwater is already affecting their shallow lakes and their rivers. In that part of the county, the water table is actually visible. It's on the surface. And so when the groundwater is drawn, those lakes and rivers disappear. This is a quote from a Mr. Sherburne. He said, "Water is being sucked out from beneath people's feet by the wells in the more densely populated areas." His question is, will water supply become the limiting factor for development? It's unheard of, but 100 years from now, it's possible. And so what this bill does is put in place, first of all, a fee, and I'm going to have an amendment about the fee, and then it also sets up a groundwater area monitoring account. And to give you some background on that, I'm going to ask. Thank you.
Mr. Lacusmo, welcome to the committee.
I can never say his name.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And also with me is Dave Luthi, who was probably the chief author on the groundwater monitoring report that we were required to do. So if the committee would like detail on that, we could provide that. But within your handouts was a three-page handout that kind of outlines what was in the groundwater monitoring report that's it's just a typed page, I think, Mr. Chairman. You have it in your hand. And this outlines a couple things. One, this is just the summary page of our groundwater report that you may have seen it. I think Dave can hold it up. The cover looked like that. If
we have it.
Okay, Mr. Chair. Thank you. And we were required last year to prepare a report to the legislature outlining what the needs would be to establish a groundwater monitoring network for the 11-county metropolitan area. So that's what we did in that report. And then as part of that, the legislative response to that report was to develop this the bill that you have in front of you, which does two things. It transfers some money that was set to go to the PCA for groundwater to this new groundwater monitoring account, and it also creates a fee on groundwater users within the 11-county metropolitan area that generates funds that also go to this account. The if you look on or on page 2 of the one handout, it shows what the 11-county metro groundwater use is. It is about 150 billion gallons a year, and the fees end up being it's 0.0008 cents per gallon, which is equivalent to $8 per million. You see that's distributed between public water supply, industrial supply, irrigation, and other uses, with the most of that being borne by the public water suppliers. And there are on this sheet some examples of what that fee equates to for an individual. In the city of Edina, it would be about 32 cents a person or 69 cents a household. In a community like Wyoming, it's a little bit less than that. They must use a little less water. 22 cents per person or 63 cents per household based on those rates. And it also then gives examples for agricultural irrigation, which right now their minimum water use fee, because a typical center pivot uses 43 million gallons a year, they're under the $50 million that's in 50, or they're under the minimum water use of 50 million gallons that has a minimum fee of $140. Their fee based on this would go up to $500. And then golf course and industrial, there's a couple examples of that where the fees are shown for both of those. Coca-Cola bottling, for example, they have a water use fee of $784. This monitoring fee adds about $1,400 on it for a total fee, a new fee of $2,100. So that's the breakdown of real generally of how a couple of these fees fit. The there is a list on here of the major water users from groundwater, the 100 largest users in the 11-county metro area. So you see who's paying parts of this fee. And I think that's real briefly what is entailed in this bill, Mr. Chairman, unless you had other specific questions, or Mr. Luthi has anything to add.
Mr. Luthi, do you have comments to make about
it? No, I believe that you have the report. I can go into detail as to the importance of having a monitoring network that understands what's actually happening in the aquifers in the 11-county metro area so that we would understand how water levels are changing and how water gets from here to there is part of this. There's also the need to understand what is actually happening in the stressed part of the aquifers, which is where the water appropriation occurs from, where the pumps are. And so the combination of the two things is that the study will and the monitoring network will help us understand the water levels both outside of the area of pumping zones of the well systems as well as inside the areas where the pumping actually is occurring, so we can get a better understanding of how to manage the system.
Senator Romola, I see the establishment of the monitoring account and the new fee that would be instituted. So would this go to augment the monitoring activity that's already in place? Because what we have in the bill, it just talks about the dollars.
Mr. Chair, the fee goes into a new account, right? Called, it is a new account, isn't it?
Yes.
Called
yes.
The Metro Area Groundwater Monitoring Account. There's two things that happen in the bill. First, money is transferred from the PCA to DNR, so that $5 million that comes from PCA moves to the DNR to establish the account. And then the other part of the bill, this is Section 1, and in Section 1 is the establishment of the fee. And I have an amendment for that fee establishment, if I could make that amendment.
Senator Lacus, Mr. Lacus.
Mr. Chairman, these funds would augment the existing monitoring, okay, but they expand that that system to add new wells and to automate the acquisition of the data and to develop a data management system. So all of the agencies, Department of Health, PCA, DNR, Agriculture, that have need for this data, have it in a readily accessible manner.
Okay, thank you. And Senator Rummel moves the adoption of the A3 amendment. Do you want to
That's right, Mr.
comment
Chair.
On it?
And what this amendment does is, instead of initiating the fee in 2010, which means it would be collected in 2011, it pushes it back 1 year. So it's beginning 2011, the fee would be collected in 2012. And I had some concerns that, given the slow recovery of the economy and some of the stresses just in general, and I've heard from a number of people from the cities and from the counties that there's difficulty even collecting their current water fees, and so it seems that we ought to delay that fee.
Discussion on the A3 amendment? Senator Dill.
Well, Mr. Chairman, Senator Rummel, it looks to me like you're changing the fee also. Is that correct?
Senator Rummel.
So it's actually going up.
Mr. Lacusmo says yes.
Oh,
we
going,
are doing that.
It's going down. Okay.
It's going down.
So it's going to stay down.
Right. What I understand is, for the first few years, what the fee does is buy the equipment, install the wells, and get everything in place. Once that's in place, the fee covers the maintaining and the understanding, the analysis of the data. So it can go down after a few years once all the wells are established.
Further discussion on the A3 amendment? There being no further discussion, we'll proceed to vote. All those in favor of adopting the A3 amendment indicate by saying aye.
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 Opposed? The motion prevails and the amendment's adopted.
Now, there are some other things in this bill that I think we should, if we could quickly just walk through the bill. In Section 1, that's where the fee is established. Section 2 is where we set up the account. And is that where we move? And I believe that's where we move the DNR money, the PCA money to the DNR money.
From Section 3.
From Section 3, I'm sorry, Subdivision 2. There are some other items in this bill that deal with clean water funding appropriations, and I just wanted to draw them to your attention. Subdivision 1 appropriates some dollars for the water quality standards for total nitrogen and nitrate elements. We just talked about Subdivision 2, which moves the dollars into the account. Subdivision 3 makes an appropriation to Bowser for permanent conservation easement on riparian buffers. And that's blank, as you can see. And as we talked earlier at the beginning of the hearing, depending on our priorities and what percent of reserve we want, whether we do this and how much we do in these three areas would be up to us. And so there's grants to the watershed district in this subdivision and easements. And there's also one minor change also. I have the A1 amendment. And this is an amendment that comes from the Met Council.
Senator Rummel has moved the adoption of the A1 amendment. Senator Rummel, on your amendment.
And on line 1.23, I need to make an oral amendment. instead of December 31st, 2013, it should be December 31st, 2012. That makes it conform with the decisions that came out of Senator Rest's committee. So Senator Rest has already approved this advisory committee until 2012.
So, Senator Rummel, you can just incorporate that change.
So I'd like to incorporate that in my amendment.
So that's incorporated.
And then lines 128 and 129 applies in counties, and it names the counties.
Questions for Senator Rummel? Senator Rummel, we have somebody from the Metropolitan Cities Association of Metropolitan Municipalities that would like to testify. Mr. Olson. Mr. Olson and Mr. Johnson, welcome to the committee.
Want me to go first?
Yeah, go ahead.
Mr. Chair, if it's all right, I'll start off. My name is Craig Johnson, here representing the League of Minnesota Cities. This proposal was brought to us by the House author earlier this legislative session. We have gone to the State City Engineers Association Legislative Committee twice to discuss it, the Metropolitan City Engineers Organization, and the Water Utility Council.
Mr. Johnson, could you hold up for just a second? Senator Rummel has moved to adopt the A1 amendment. You're not going to talk about the A1 amendment, are you?
No, he's just going to
talk.
So
Mr. Chair,
why
no.
Why don't we vote on the A1 amendment just to keep everything in order? Discussion on the A1 amendment. There being no further discussion, proceed to vote. All those in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? The motion prevails. The amendment's adopted. Okay, Mr. Johnson, now go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. After having extensive discussions with those organizations that really represent the people running our public works systems and drinking water supplies and, around the state and in particular in the metro area, we had a conference call of the League of Minnesota Cities Board of Directors last Thursday to discuss this particular proposal. As you can guess, this is not the sort of proposal that it comes across very lightly to our city officials, particularly at a time when city resources are as diminished as they are right now. But at that meeting, after a very thorough discussion of over an hour that was fairly contentious, a decision was made that the league would support this proposal with a number of caveats that I will get to in a moment. There were some reasons for that. First of all, we think this is an appropriate use of the Clean Water Fund groundwater monies. If you look at the language in the constitutional amendment, it was very clear that protection of groundwater sources was one of the focuses of how this money is supposed to be used, and this definitely falls within that category, and it is not research that we currently have. It's new information that would be gathered and a much better system for tracking that information in the future. The data is likely to be useful and needed over the next 20 years by our water professionals. To sum it up as simply as I'm able, actually I'm able to very simply, to do it more technically, I'd need them here. We have excellent data at the city level in the metropolitan area for how much water there is within a local jurisdiction, where they can get it, where the best places to put wells are, and what certain draws on those wells are doing to their availability of water at different times of the year. What we don't know is how that affects surrounding communities, how that affects the other aquifers, what additional new draws on that water from the growth areas in the outer rings of the 11-county metro area are going to do to water supplies further in the metropolitan area. There's a lot of things that we don't understand very well about how groundwater works. And in the metropolitan area, where we have very high demand on it, we're going to need to get to that data sooner rather than later. The board felt that there was some urgency to this and that it was a reasonable thing to look at doing, maybe not this year, maybe next year, maybe whenever, but at some point soon, it's something worth considering doing. And finally, they really felt it was appropriate that the state was stepping up to play a significant role in funding this effort. Cities really feel that they have spent millions of dollars to gather the information they need for water supplies in their area. And if the state feels that more data is needed, we thought it was appropriate that the state step up to help gather that data. Of course, their recognition is that as the major users of the system, we probably all also need to be ready to step in and help deal with that need. As far as the caveats that I was mentioning before, it really comes down to this, that the $5 million that is proposed to be used from the Clean Water Fund monies is just over half of the money necessary to put in place the monitoring system and wells needed, according to the report from the DNR. We feel that's an appropriate share, and if that level or higher amount of Clean Water Fund money is available, that would keep our support for the proposal. We also are happy to see that all users of groundwater are included in this solution. There are a number of uses of groundwater in the metropolitan area, and everyone who uses more than 1 million gallons a year or more than 10,000 gallons per day, in other words, they have to have a state permit for water, groundwater appropriation, is currently included in this proposal at the same level. Everyone's expected to pay their same fair share based on the amount of water they use. Not based on any other factor, just based on the gallons of water you use, you pay the same fee as other people using the same number of gallons. We also have worked with the DNR, and we would continue to do this, to see if there are ways to lower the cost of this proposal through efficiencies in existing data. Like I said, we have communities that have gathered extensive, millions of dollars per community in some cases, data on groundwater as they've tried to make sure they have the information they need for future water supply in their community. Some of that data, actually a great deal of that data, is not readily available to the DNR, and it certainly is not all consolidated in one database the way that this proposal would recommend having our groundwater data consolidated. And then finally, what you just dealt with in the A3 amendment, in the DNR's initial recommendations, the out-year funding needed to continue to operate the system and process the data management was just over $800,000 per year. This fee at $8 per million gallons generates closer to $1.1 million per year. So we recommended that the fee be reduced to $6 per million gallons in the out years to bring the rate of the fee down to what DNR actually is projecting they would need to run their program. That is what your A3 amendment just did, is lowers the fee by 25% in the out years to bring it down to that lower level. So, Mr. Chair and members, I'd be happy to answer whatever questions I have, but in the current version of the bill, we would be willing to accept this new responsibility.
Thank you. Questions for Mr. Johnson? Mr. Olson?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, my name is Todd Olson. I represent Metro Cities. My board has not taken a position on this bill, so my information is purely informational on the stresses that city water providers are facing today. There would be two ways for water providers to pay for this fee, that the $8 per million gallons, they could either absorb the fee or they could pass it on to their users. Through the housing crisis, cities have seen an uptick in unpaid water utility charges. A survey was conducted of statewide. I understand this is only for the 11-county metro area, but the data exists for a statewide survey. 93 cities responded. 82 of them have seen an increase in assessed water utility charges that are unpaid, and the way they get assessed to the property taxes, usually they wait until a bill is 6 to 12 months delinquent, and then they will certify that it's delinquent to the county, and then it gets assessed to the property taxes. In 2009, there were over $9.3 million in assessed unpaid water utility charges, which was an increase from 2008 of $1.5 million. So the city's water providers are seeing an increase in a hole in their budget that they either have to cash flow through general fund dollars or they have to defer maintenance on their systems. So there is existing stresses on their systems.
Mr. Olson, that $9.3 million, could you characterize that for us? Like, how much of that is residential, how much of it is industrial, and what is the total amount that's paid for water?
I cannot break it down. It was a very short five-question survey just to get a kind of a baseline for what's out there. And they only asked them if this was an increase from 2008. We don't have it before the housing crisis either.
Thank you. Other questions for either Mr. Johnson or Mr. Olson? I don't see any, so thank you very much for your testimony.
Did you have a question, Senator Dill?
Senator Rommel, Senator Dill has an amendment. I don't know when a good time would be to take his amendment. Do you have additional testimony you want to complete? Or?
Nope.
Okay, Senator Dill.
Mr. Chair and members, I have an amendment here that I received and saw for the first time as I sat down here at the table. And it, as I understand it, was given to Mr. Knopf to prepare from some agricultural organization. And I want to get a little further information before I actually offer it. And the amendment, it's the A2 amendment, which you can pass out, but it fits on the on page 3 of the Rummel bill or amendment. And it goes on the end of line 3.14, and it says that the fee shall not be assessed on appropriations of water for agricultural irrigation. And I've been trying to figure out how much that fee is, and I can see what it says in this handout here. But what I don't know is if there's some other fees in addition to what we have listed here. What's listed is a monitoring fee of $360 and a water use fee of $140, which comes to $500 per year on a 135-acre center pivot system. And what I believe that center pivot system is on a quarter of a section of land. So it's 160 acres, but out of 160 acres, you can usually get about 135 acres actually irrigated. But Mr. Lacusmo would know the answers to some of these questions here. Are there, what is it? What are the total fees that somebody would be paying for water using that a center pivot system on a 160 acre piece of ground?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Dill, a typical center pivot covers 135 acres of land, and it uses about 45 million gallons of water. So the existing fee that exists today, they would pay $140. And actually, you could find that fee on if you look on page 1 or line 1.14 of Senate File 3138, $140 for amounts not exceeding 50 million gallons per year. That's a center pivot irrigation. They use less than the 50 million gallons per year. So that's their existing fee.
And so now the monitoring fee, which is listed at $360 here, that was at 0.008, but we've lowered that to 0.006. So when I just did the arithmetic here, I got $270 instead of the 360. Would that be about right?
Mr. Lacusmo?
Mr. Chairman and Senator Dill, the monitoring fee would be 0.0008 cents per gallon until it drops down to the 0.0006. So it starts out at the 8, which is 8, it converts to $8 per million, and then after the 4 years, it drops down to the $6 per million. So at 45 million gallons, at $8 per million, that equates to $360. That's the additional fee for agricultural one center pivot irrigation system. You add the two together for a total fee then of $500 per year.
Senator Dill,
there it is. Yeah, I see that. Well, what I'm trying to figure out is what the argument is for not including the agricultural irrigation in this bill. And just looking at it here on 135 acres at a cost of $500 per acre or $500 per system, that comes out to about less than $4 an acre, or $3 and some, close to $4 an acre, I guess. So now what does it cost to recover that on a field of corn or beans that is being irrigated? And so I'm not sure if I want to offer this amendment or not, but it's what's your reaction, Senator Rummel?
Senator Rummel.
Mr. Chair and Senator Dill, why don't I let Mr. Johnson address his concerns about that amendment?
Mr. Johnson?
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, as I mentioned in my testimony, one of our concerns is that all of the large water users be treated equally in gathering this data. If a individual who lived in one of my cities decided for their purposes, whether it's private or for their business, they needed 45 million gallons a year of water, they're going to pay a whole lot more than $500 a year for it. They're going to pay a per gallon fee on top of that groundwater appropriation surcharge amount that the community is adding on to their water bill. So while I certainly understand that as a business expense, it's an additional, starts off at $360 per year, and then in the out years drops to the $270 per year that you calculated out starting in 2015. The same cost applies at a per gallon rate to our city water users. So we're not getting by any cheaper or in any other way being subsidized in this. Everyone who uses more than a million gallons per year in the 11-county metro area only is paying the same rate under this proposal right now.
And members, I'd draw your attention back to this handout, this three-page handout. In the grid, this in the middle of the page, the public supply is really covering 66% of the monitoring fee. Industrial is 7%, irrigation is 18%, and other uses is 7%. So the largest impact is really assumed by the folks who use water for drinking, frankly. And the importance of this bill, I can't begin to underestimate the importance of this bill. Right now, we are drawing water from our groundwater. 90% of the metropolitan area uses groundwater for their drinking water. And so if we run out of that water, we have a real problem for drinking water. 75% of outstate Minnesotans, more or less, use groundwater for drinking water. So it's very important for us to pay attention to our supply of groundwater, not just for the immediate present, but for the long term, for our children and for our grandchildren. With the growth of the population, our groundwater use is going up much faster than our growth in population, and pretty soon we will not be able to have communities. That's what that article in the Trib was about. Pretty soon you won't be able to have new homes or anything because we won't have enough water to supply them. As far as the people who do irrigation, it's really in their best interest to have a clear understanding of what the water capacity they have so that they can take the kinds of measures they need in order to run their operations efficiently. This bill will provide them with the information they need to figure that out. It's if I were a farmer, if I were irrigating golf courses, no matter what I'm using the water for, if I don't know whether I'm going to have enough supply in the future, I can't do anything about it. I'm operating blind. So, frankly, Senator Dill, I would oppose your amendment.
Mr. Lockesman.
Mr. Chairman, you know, this concern has been raised by the agricultural interests, and one of the points that I would make for the committee is that there is a big difference in the productivity of the irrigated land versus the non-irrigated land.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Dill.
I haven't offered the amendment yet, and I'm not going to. I'll skip it.
Thank you, Mr. Dill.
Further discussion on the bill? Senate File 3138. Senator Rummel, I see this is a first engrossment. What committee was this bill sent to originally?
It went to Senator Chaudhry's committee.
So to the Environment
Yes.
Policy Committee.
Yes, it did.
Mr. Mueller.
Mr. Chairman and members, I just want to point out there are some blanks in the bill right now with the Bowser. For the request from Bowser and the one from the DNR. And the spreadsheet that I handed out early in the committee, I've put some numbers in for this bill. They're based on what the House is currently showing for those requests. So I just want to make members aware that there are numbers that are being requested. I can go through it quick and at least mention what the House has sort of penciled in for some of these requests.
You've got to wait just a second. Senator Rummel, the blank appropriations that are on page 4 and 5, did you have the amount you want to put into those blanks, or we can leave that silent at this point?
I think we need to leave it silent based on our earlier discussion of what we have in the reserve and whether or not we will go down from our 6.6% of the balance to and what that really means. We've heard a number of bills this evening, and my guess is there might not be very much money left for those parts of the bill.
Won't be much trickling down.
There won't be much trickle down.
Mr. Miller, since Senator Rummel just is going to leave it, I think we don't care what the House did.
Right. But, Mr. Chairman, one more thing. I just want to point out there is a whole big fiscal note on the bill that I didn't hand out right now because it's 9 pages long, and Mr. Loxmal has covered most of the information already in his own handout about what the fee is. But I do want to point out the appropriation for PCA on page 3. The $615,000 for the rulemaking. Within the fiscal note, they describe that $615,000 actually being used up over a two-year period in fiscal year 11 and 12. So it's for the rulemaking process over a two-year period. And that isn't clear right now in the appropriation language. But I just wanted to point that out, that it was if we did this, we'd have to add some language saying it was available for an extra year. But we will wait to see.
Rummel, do you want to make that amendment now to have the $615,000 available till, I don't know, the best process for doing that, to make it available until it's expended, or to say 2011 and 2012?
Mr. Chairman, probably for this one, in a rulemaking process, maybe we'd have it available through fiscal year, at the end of fiscal year 13, actually give maybe 3 years to spend it for the rulemaking process, so maybe that would be a proper motion.
Mr. Chair and committee, I would agree with that.
Make that one. Senate Counsel, do you have the amendment down?
Mr. Chairman, I think what Mr. Mueller was talking about was that to go through fiscal year 2013, so that would be June 30th, 2013. So after the period on 3.29, this appropriation is available until June 30th, 2013.
You've heard the motion, members, on Senator Rummel's motion to amend on page 3, line 29, after the period. All in favor of that motion, indicate by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? The motion prevails. The amendment's adopted. Senator Rummel.
Mr. Chair, I move that Senate file 3138 be laid on the table for possible inclusion in the
Senator Rummel has moved that Senate File 3138, as amended, be laid on the table for possible inclusion in an omnibus bill. All in favor of that motion, indicate by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? The motion prevails, and the bill is laid on the table.
This little star-like one now. Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee.
Committee has before it now Senate file number 2654, and Senator Anderson is going to present the bill on behalf of Senator Olson.
Thank you very
Senator
much,
Anderson.
Mr. Chair and members. Senator Fredrickson is correct. Senator Olson had a family emergency, and as a co-author, I've agreed to stand in her place today to offer the Star Lake Board program for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. And members, you will recognize this from last year, where we did put this allocation in our Clean Water Legacy program recommendations in our legislation that passed. And unfortunately, it was vetoed. And hopefully, we can figure out what the reasons were for that and put together a proposal this year that will meet the whatever it is that the governor is looking for, because it is a really great program for citizen participation and trying to encourage lakes to do better by with citizen involvement. And Dale Gustafson knows much more about this than I do, so I'm going to let him testify to you tonight.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. I'm pleased to be here to talk about something that is really about people and people expanding the value of the money that's being used from the Legacy Fund. We're a little bit unique in that way. We did set up the Star Lake Board by previous legislation and started out pretty strong and kind of got the wind taken out of our sail a little bit in funding last year. But the basic of this program is we have a 15-member board, all volunteers. There's nobody paid in this on this organization at all. So the only money that is being spent by the board is just for the expenses of the members that are working on providing this. And the real goal is to do two things: to reward existing associations of people, be it lakes or rivers, and we are incorporated to do business as Minnesota Lakes and Rivers, because we deal with the river associations as well, which is a very nebulous kind of term. But it's to reward those groups of people who have really taken the steps to do something to protect and preserve the waters of Minnesota. And secondly, and maybe more importantly over the long run, is for those associations of people that haven't really gotten to the standard that we've identified as sort of the gold standard, here's an organization that really has their act together and they're really effective. Our goal is to help these other associations get to that point so they can have the same kind of efficiency. So as an example, if we designate a lake association as Star Lake, they are given this title. The people are given the title, not the water, the people. It could be a really bad lake. It could be a really good lake. But it's people working on making it better, solving problems and making it better. And those problems are really diverse, from loss of habitat to fisheries problems to runoff issues and all kinds of conditions, maintaining natural shorelines, doing things like the filter strips and the rain gardens and all these things that can be done. But these organizations are out there really doing it with really not very much money. And the thing about the money that goes through this program is when you give a small chunk of money to a volunteer organization, they really get something out of it. As an example, the Lake Association I'm involved with, if we got a couple thousand dollars to go for a project, we could do many hundreds of feet of lakeshore restoration. Because in addition to the money that we would get from the designation as a Star Lake Board, we have matched it at least equal with volunteer time. So it's a program helping people to understand the importance of doing it, giving them the reward for getting out there and doing something, and encouraging others to do the same. Now, we've put together a pretty exhaustive application process, and in order to qualify for this money, you have got to be doing, first of all the things that our elected agencies are requiring of you, whether it's DNR, it's MPCA, any of the organizations that have requirements, and working with all of those agencies, including the local soil and water, to meet all of these requirements. You must have a lake management plan that's been approved by the DNR. On our staff of volunteers, we have staff people, as were put into the original legislation. So we've got a lot of technical help sitting with the volunteers, and the volunteers that are members are pretty selectively screened for people who really know how to get things done in terms of improving the environment and taking care of the waters of Minnesota. So we really think that this is a relatively small amount of money in the things that could be spent, but it's doing an awful lot of good, and there's a lot of excitement about this program. We hope very much that we can keep it going in the future, and it's going to require some funding so that we have the abilities to designate more of these groups and encourage them. And I'd like to just open questions, if that's appropriate, and see what you might not know about our board.
Thank you, Mr. Gustafson. Is that right?
Gustafson, yes.
Gustafson. Are there questions from members of the committee?
Madam Chair.
Senator Fredrickson.
Gustafson, would you help refresh my memory a little? You did receive an appropriation 2 years ago?
Yes, we did. $100,000.
And Mr. Chair, Mr. Gustafson, on what did you spend that money? How was that used?
We didn't spend very much. Put it this way. When we didn't make it through, we were getting organized the first year, got established as a 501c3 and started working out the criteria that met the legislation, which was pretty challenging. We got that put together. We started in a process of evaluating how we were going to do this. How do you say this is a good organization? It's not an easy task. Then our funding got restricted, and we really felt that what we should do is be rather conservative in starting. So we didn't end up going 1 year and then being out of money and not being able to do anything. So we have spent less than $30,000 in of that first $100,000 getting organized on our overhead, on getting everything we've got done to this point, and we are moving forward now with our applications so that if no more money came through, we would be very much limiting the number of people who want to apply and getting funds in this next, say, 12 months. And we would be down to zero by the time we would get to a year from June.
Madam
that's
Chair,
kind of where we project.
Mr. Gunnison, so you still have $70,000 that's been...
We do.
...not been spent.
Thank you.
Do you want to talk about the application?
Mr. Gustafson, could you give me an example of a typical application? What would a typical Star Lake group apply for, and how much would they be asking for?
Okay. Excellent question, Madam Chair. We have put together a several-page application where we ask them to identify all the things that they've done towards the improvement of the waters that they're working on. And those range from, like I said, the fisheries to lakeshore protection to runoff to any pollution things that were going on in the lake or in the watershed of that lake. And these are typically not watersheds as we would know them by that name, but they would be smaller than that, a normal lake shed, which is a term not really coined yet, but we've been using it. So it's the watershed that's around the people that have gathered together to be part of that organization. So initially what we have chosen to do is when we get a lake that passes that qualification and we designate them as Star Lake, based on the points they get in that application, they receive a cash payment for money that they can use for one of the things that's in their lake management plan. And again, just a key on that, it's already an approved plan by the DNR. So they can't take that money and just go do something that's kind of a harebrained idea. It's got to be one of the accepted things. But really, we don't want to say you must use it for shoreline restoration only. That's part of the problem of the monies that are available today. There are a lot of places that you can apply for monies, but they have very narrow restrictions. So as an association, if your problem doesn't fit the solution that's a little broader, it's difficult to get funds. And that's where we think we're kind of unique, in the fact that these funds can be used for practically anything that's in their lake management plan and, of course, approved by all the agencies.
Thank you. And then, Mr. Gustafson, how many lakes or how many groups are participating in the Star Lake program? Is this statewide? Is this in a region? Who are the active people so far?
I think our board is a good sample. It's really across the whole state, and we are getting interest from the entire part of the state. Now, if you just slice off the southeast corner of the state, the lakes that are there are unique. They have serious problems, but they're really unique. You can't really compare those, say, to the northeast portion. Their lakes are entirely different. We've dealt quite at some length as to how does a lake that comes in and has a real active association and is sitting on one of these pristine lakes. And so you say, you know, what do you need to do? Protect is the right word. You may not need to do any restoration if you're at one of those, but you really have to protect it. So they're not excluded that way. And so far, our interest and our applications have been probably centered towards the middle of the lake where we have most of the, or middle of the state, where we have most of the lakes that have most of the people. But it's ranging out to the edges. So we see it as the entire state, and we expect that the applications will be unique with the geographic area that they come from.
And Mr. Gustafson, did you suggest that these lakes tend to be some of the smaller lakes that aren't part of the big plans going on?
Madam Chair, it really appears to be that way. I think the largest lake that we've really brought through the process was 1,000 acres. The other two were considerably smaller than that. The mega lakes are dealing with different kinds of issues, and it seems that if you take one of the really big lakes, it's made up of a number of different networks of people. And since our program is really about people making a difference, when they start getting spread out, they don't get together and pull together quite the way a smaller lake shed might. But that doesn't mean that they can't qualify and won't be, and we've got some bigger ones that are in the application process now.
So the appropriation you're asking for is $100,000. Would you say that would address 10, 15, 50? How many grants do you think you could distribute with those kinds of funds? And you still have the $70,000 that you have not spent. Have you got any sense of the interest?
Yes, we have, Madam Chair. We have about 15 lakes right now that we think are that meet the initial criteria and are ready to move forward now with the formal application. So those lakes will probably easily make it through, and we think that if there was no more funding, we'd be able to designate them, give them a cash award for it, which is only, I think the highest one so far has been like $2,300, which is part of the problem. This is a little callous to say, but if you're a lake association looking for sources of money and you see what's out there and you see the applications you can make, you have to evaluate how much work it really is to get one of those. And do you have a good chance of getting it? This is no small task for these associations. You've got long, complex applications. And a couple thousand dollars doesn't solve a lot of problems, but however many dollars we can give them, they multiply, you know, at least twice. So we think that we could probably handle 15 to 20. We've got the interest there, and that would get us totally to the ends of our funds. And we'd like to extend that to more like 45 or 50 in the next year time period. So when we give our regular report back to the legislature next January, we could be talking about a lot more lake groups that are out there doing projects with this money.
And have you, as a board, decided for yourselves how you will determine your success? Is your success in terms of the number of participants? Is your success determined by the changes that are made? How will you know you're achieving what you want to achieve?
That is a difficult question to assess, and I think that most all of the 15 men of our board are very optimistic that what's really going to solve our water problems are the people. I'm talking about surface water problems, are people that are there and using it. And we are seeing that change of attitude. And all you have to do is go around a lake and look, and you're seeing natural shorelines starting to show up. You're seeing people installing rain gardens. You're seeing people think differently about it. So that change in the attitude about how we need to protect our waters instead of just using them to death or loving them to death. We used to call it loving them to death, but I don't think that's a good term. I think using them to death is the right term. I think we're really seeing that. And we will only see those that we come in contact with. And so far, the ones that we've been talking with are really excited about that. And that's plenty for our volunteer group to be excited about. If we can touch quite a number of lakes and they can do things that they couldn't do before, we'd be very satisfied with that.
And as you look down the road, I noticed that on your bill on line 1.15, this is a one-time appropriation. How do you see sustaining this effort?
What we've done so far, Madam Chair, is work with the other agencies and try to get incorporated into their packages too as a source of money. We've been working a little bit unsuccessfully at this point toward private donations and getting some money into it that way. And I believe that we think that the legacy funds for a small portion of it on an ongoing basis is a pretty logical kind of conclusion to supplement anything else that we'd be able to get from other sources.
One of the things that we look for in the Clean Water Legacy Funds are measurable outcomes. So I would ask you in this year or 2 years, is this for 1 year or for 2 years? This is for 2 years. To consider that if you need to come back, one of the things we will have to, or we will be asking is, what are the measurable outcomes? So your board needs to consider that carefully. If it's participation, is it participation and changes in the actual quality of the lakes? I know you said you have some lakes that might participate that are already pristine, so you need to consider, because you're the guys in charge of your board, what you want to achieve. What is it you want to achieve, and how will you measure? How will you know you're getting there? And I was going to start this this hearing with a review of our clean water appropriations from last year, and we did appropriate money because we think it's important that there is citizen participation. That's where this fits in, and that there is education. But so you know, you fit into the bill, just into the legacy funds, just fine. But continued success will depend on how you are deciding to measure where you're going. Is that fair?
I think it is, ma'am. I would suggest that list will probably be as long as many lakes as we designate, because they're so unique between them. But as long as they're positive things that they're doing, that's fine.
Well, I don't think it's just a list of things. You know, your goal, as I heard you start out, is your goal really is to get this participation. So what is the, you know, get a kind of thumbnails. What is your level of participation or interest right now? And then when you come back in 2 years, how has that changed? That's one way to measure it. You know, have you got more people, more lakes? And then what happened to the money? So you spent $100,000. What happened? And did it make a measurable difference? So it seems that you at least have two good things there to work on. Are there any other questions for Mr. Gustafson or Senator Anderson?
Well, Madam Chair, if there's no other questions, I would move that Senate File 2654 be laid on the table for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill.
Senator Anderson has moved that Senate File 2654 be laid on the table for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. Any discussion on her motion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The motion passes or is adopted. Seeing no other business at the table, I believe we are adjourned. Thank you all for coming and staying so late.
Thank you.